The Loop. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on today's program, Faith Perlow reports on laws in Ukraine restricting access to Russian books and music. Anna Mateo has this week's words and their stories on mile expressions. Dan Friedel brings us the higher education report about a law that helps female international students play sports at U.S. colleges. Ashley Thompson and John Russell have a story about the famine in Somalia. And finally, John Russell reports on U.S. technology companies taking back job offers. But first,
two new laws in Ukraine aim to restrict books and music from Russian citizens. The laws will ban the printing of books by Russians who held Russian citizenship after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Unless Russians give up their passports, their books will not be printed in Ukraine. The laws ban businesses from importing books printed in Russia, Belarus, and Russian-controlled Ukrainian territory. They also require special permission to import books in the Russian language from other countries. An additional law would ban music by post-1991 Russian citizens in Ukrainian media and in public areas. There would also be quotas to increase the amount of Ukrainian language heard on TV and radio. Ukraine's cultural minister, Alexander Takarchenko, said that he was happy with the new laws. They still have to be signed by President Volodymyr Zelensky before they take effect. The Ukrainian cabinet's website quoted him as saying, "The laws are designed to help Ukrainian authors share quality content with the widest possible audience." He said that Russian creative content would not be accepted in physical form because of the Russian invasion. Even some Ukrainian lawmakers, who the public considers to be pro-Russia, supported the new laws. The new rules are part of a movement in Ukraine called de-Russification. It is the latest wave in the cultural break from Russia that has been happening since the Soviet period ended in 1991. Some consider the laws part of a process over the years to remove the legacy of rule by Russia. After the collapse of the USSR, there was decommunization, or the removal of communist ideas and culture. Now, de-Russification aims to undo the connection to Russia and policies that hurt Ukrainian identity. Support for this process increased after the 2014 invasion of Crimea and the separatist movement in eastern Ukraine. But since the February invasion, support for de-Russification has taken on a new meaning. The government in Moscow disagrees with the process. Russian officials say that people who speak Russian in Ukraine, about 30% of the population, are being forced to speak Ukrainian and are being oppressed by Ukraine's policies. I'm Faith Perlow. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. In the United States, many people use the English system for measuring. While some people use the metric system, our idioms and expressions often stick with measurement words from the English system. Today, we talk about expressions using the word mile. And we have miles and miles of them. That means we have a lot. For example, if you can run a mile a minute, you can run very fast. So we can use the expression a mile a minute to describe people who do things very quickly. For example, Sarah was very excited about her trip. When she told us about it, she talked a mile a minute. We could barely follow what she was saying. Here is another example. Sam is a very quick problem solver. His brain seems to work a mile a minute. Now, when we talk about running a race, we use both kilometers and miles. However, when we use the expression go the extra mile, we only use mile. If you run a race that is 10 miles long and you run 11 miles, you have run farther than others and farther than needed. So when we go the extra mile, we do more than is asked of us. We do this to prove we are hardworking or dedicated to something. For example, many friends were only supposed to collect used books for a literary organization. But Tori went the extra mile. She delivered the books to needy families in the community. A mile is equal to 1.6 kilometers. That is far enough away that you cannot see, smell, or notice something. Well, at least it should be. So if we say, I could see that from a mile away, it means something is very noticeable. For example, I can spot a liar from a mile away. That means I am very good at detecting people who do not tell the truth. Even if they are a mile from me, I can tell. If a scent is very strong, you could say you smell it from a mile away. I don't know what cologne that man was wearing, but I could smell it a mile away. To be a million miles away is even farther. We often use that expression to mean lost in thought. If I am a million miles away, I seem very far away from those around me. We can also use it to compare things. For example, her goals for her future and her parents' goals for her future were a million miles apart. The two goals had nothing in common. Our last expression describes people who are selfish and greedy. They always want more. If you give some people a little of something, they will often take a lot.
I knew a woman who was like that. Every time I gave her an inch, she took a mile. She always wanted more from the people around her. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. If you are listening to VOA, Learning English, to improve your English, then you are truly going the extra mile. Good job. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
The United States federal law that requires women and men to have the same chances to take part in school activities such as sports is turning 50 years old this year. It is the part of a federal law known as Title IX. It affects educational organizations such as schools and colleges, which receive money from the federal government. One goal of the law is to give women and girls a fair chance to play sports at school and to receive the same treatment as men and boys. As a result, many women who are good at sports have been able to also get financial aid for college. The law even helps people who are from other countries. For Maria Bulanova of Russia, Title IX means she was able to compete in her sport of bowling and to get money to go to school at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. She was surprised the head of the bowling team learned about her all the way from Russia. Bulanova was a part of the Russian team at the 2015 Bowling World Cup in Las Vegas, Nevada. She did well enough that a number of coaches from university bowling teams noticed her. During one week in February 2016, she visited five U.S. colleges. She chose to attend Vanderbilt. Bulanova was not the only international bowler on the team at Vanderbilt, which won the national championship in 2018. Kristen Kwa of Singapore and Emily Rigney of Australia were also members. John Williamson is Vanderbilt's bowling coach. He said he considers his team a success story. His team is good at the sport. And because the school has a bowling team, he can help young women come to Tennessee and get a world-class education at Vanderbilt. He said, "The combination of good competition, the chance to play the sport and to go to a good school is sort of the best of everything." Kwa was the first of the three international bowlers on that championship team to reach out to Vanderbilt. She sent an email to the university as a member of the Singapore junior national team. Williamson went to see her at that year's World Youth Championship in Hong Kong. He also saw Bulanova and Rigney. Williamson said Kwa's email was the starting point. Because they were good at bowling, Bulanova and Kwa got money to help pay for school, a deal called a scholarship. For other foreign students who are good at sports, it can be helpful to work with a sports agency. The agency helps promote the athletes to universities that are looking. But the agencies do that work in return for payment. One such agency is USA College Sport, based in Boston. It is run by Delian Bregasi of Albania. He was a soccer player who came to study and play sports in the U.S. when he was young. He started the business in 2015. Bregosi said he has helped 300 students get money to go to college since then. He charges each student $3,200. He started by working with boys who played soccer in Italy and Albania. Then he added other sports and started working with young women in 2018. He said, "Sadly, the chance to use ability in a sport to help pay for school is not available to girls in Italy." Bregosi said his agency is trying to help Italian girls who play volleyball and compete in track and field come to the U.S. The Italian girls in those sports play at a very high level, he said, and they have a good chance of getting money for school in the U.S. Sabrina Froli is a 17-year-old runner from Genoa, Italy. She got help from a sports agency and will go to Chicago later this year to study at Northwestern University. The school gave her a scholarship because of her running ability. She will be on Northwestern's track and field team. She said, "Working with an agency was costly, but it was worth it, because her school costs will be paid by the university." She said, "Because of Title IX, she does not have to choose between running races and studying mechanical engineering. She wants to be an astronaut one day." "Why should I choose?" she asked. "That is why I'm going to the United States." I'm Dan Friedel.
Morning in the Somali border town of Dalo, 11-year-old Bashir Nur Salat plans for his day's mission behind a wire fence. He eyes his prize through the barrier, lunch. The worst drought in 40 years in war-torn Somalia forced Bashir's family to leave their farm 3 months ago. They moved about 100 kilometers north to Dalo. The town is on the border with Ethiopia. Bashir lives in a place where three major crises are coming together: climate change, rising food prices, and war. Today, he leads a group of younger children who gather at the fence of Kabasa Primary School. They arrive when the school begins serving its students food. Many in Bashir's group were among the latest group of people arriving in Dalo. They arrived too late in the year to register for schooling. Through the fence, the children watch as students inside eat warm food provided by a United Nations-supported program. The program provides one of the few dependable sources of food in the town. "When I don't get food, I'm so hungry. I lie down, and I can't sleep," Bashir said quietly. His eight brothers and sisters at home were all hungry too, he added.
The drought began last year. One-third of farm animals in the country are already dead from thirst or hunger. Crops and fruit trees have dried out. Somalia needs to import more food, but people cannot afford to buy it. Foreign aid is decreasing and food prices are rising quickly because of the war in Ukraine, the world's fourth-largest grain exporter. The UN warned this month that more than a third of Somalia's 16 million people need food aid to survive. Some areas could face famine this month. aid in some places will end in June. Bashir's family had never before left their home in south-central Somalia, even when the famine in 2011 killed more than 250,000 people. Aid workers say deaths may get close to those levels again from this drought.
Such situations are set to become more common in Somalia. Rising temperatures are expected to fuel more natural disasters, many scientists say. In the last 50 years, extreme weather events have increased by 5 times, according to the UN's World Meteorological Organization, or WMO. With oceans taking in much of the increasing atmospheric heat, scientists believe warming Indian Ocean waters may be evaporating and raining down more quickly over the ocean before reaching the Horn of Africa. This leaves dry air to spread across the land. Another cause is rising air temperatures. In Somalia, temperatures have increased an average of 1.7 degrees Celsius from the pre-industrial average. That is greater than the worldwide increased average of 1.2 degrees, said Babiker. Warmer air speeds up evaporation from soil and plants.
Dalo's hospital is full of tired, weak patients in its children's area. Every bed was taken when Reuters reporters visited in May. Weakened by severe malnutrition, some children had serious infections, including measles. At the school where Bashir hunts for food, 10-year-old Suleko Mohammed says she lost 2 brothers and a sister to measles in 6 weeks. Her 2 brothers were 2 and 3 years old. Her older sister, she said, used to help her with homework. Down the road, market areas offered fruits, beans, and bags of flour and wheat. But the foods were too costly for many to consider buying. Food prices have jumped by up to 160% in parts of Somalia following the drought and the conflict in Ukraine.
Dalo is better served by aid agencies than most Somali towns. The Kabasa Primary School was established to help with the growing number of arriving families who were harmed by the 2011 famine. The meal program helps keep children in school. The UN's World Food Program says schools in Somalia get 41 U.S. cents per child for 2 meals a day. But the program, which supports 110,000 Somali children, has been forced to make cuts. Schools have just started a 2-month break. There is no funding for when classes restart in August. Teachers at the Kabasa Primary School said Bashir and his group of children were among at least 50 unregistered children who appeared daily hoping for meals. Sometimes teachers pushed them back. Sometimes they offered leftovers. If they eat, then there is not enough for the students, said Kabasa's principal, Abdikarim Dahir Gal. Gal watched Bashir and the others sneak into the schoolyard. He acted like he did not notice. It was the last day of the school term. I am a teacher, he said, but I am also a parent. Outside, Bashir walked back toward the fence. He had a metal plate of beans and corn. His smile was wide, and he held his head high. At last, he would eat. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell. Recent college graduates in the United States are facing the loss of job offers in the technology industry. Losing job offers is especially damaging at this time of year. The graduates say they are now prevented from seeking jobs at companies like Meta Platforms, Google, and some other large technology companies. Those companies have already hired new college-level workers for the year. Over the last week of May, Twitter called a group of young people who had received job offers from the social media company. In the calls, the company revoked, or took back, the job offers in 15-minute calls. Some of the people who received the calls told reporters about them. Iris Guo described the call to the Reuters news agency. Guo graduated from the University of Waterloo in Canada. She studied financial management and computer science. Guo, who lives in Toronto, received the bad news in a video call. She said the experience was traumatic. Since then, she has raced to find new employment in order to secure her U.S. work visa. Lucas Durant is an electrical engineering graduate from Canada. He was ready to start his new job as a software engineer at Bolt, an online sales company. While on vacation a few weeks ago, he received an email stating that his offer was being taken back. Bolt announced it would begin job cuts in late May. The company blamed economic conditions. More than 21,500 tech workers in the United States have lost their jobs so far this year. That information comes from layoffs.fyi, a website that follows job cuts. Reuters news agency looked at posts on LinkedIn and Google spreadsheets set up to help people who lost job offers. Reuters found that at least 40 recent college graduates had lost job offers in the past few weeks. As of Tuesday, 22 recent graduates were listed on a spreadsheet as having offers taken back by Twitter. 9 people were listed on a separate spreadsheet for digital money trading company Coinbase. In a statement, Twitter said it admitted that the revoked offers could put candidates in a difficult position. The company said it is offering payments to those affected. Coinbase said in a blog post from June 2nd that the decision to take back a number of job offers was not easy. It said the move was necessary to ensure we are only growing in the highest priority areas. Graduates who spoke with Reuters said they were surprised by the amount of help they have been offered. Still, the pain of losing their dream jobs has remained. One recent college graduate was ready to join Coinbase. He said Coinbase sent him an email saying the company did not plan to take back existing offers a week before he lost his job offer. The graduate did not want to be named because of his ongoing job hunt. I was disappointed for a few reasons. I didn't think leadership would make that decision, he said. Brian Kropp oversees research for human resources at Gartner's, a research company. Kropp said that while the technology companies may be saving money in the short term, they risk damage to their reputation. Just think about how unfair that is to people you're rescinding the offer from, he said. You're putting them in a painful situation. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.